You are listening to local and regional news produced by KMUN with help from our news partners. I'm Skylar Butenchin. It's Monday, August 18th. At a Seaside City Council meeting last week, city leaders adopted an ordinance that aligns with the state's model floodplain development code. As the Federal Emergency Management Agency has been working to bring the National Flood Insurance Program into compliance with the Federal Endangered Species Act, the agency has been requiring local jurisdictions to adopt and implement new pre-compliance measures. Initial requirements included prohibiting floodplain development in Seaside, adopting FEMA's model ordinance, and requiring site-specific investigation. But now, as FEMA is being challenged at the federal level, local jurisdictions are facing uncertainty regarding the federal requirements. At the recent city council meeting, Seaside Community Development Director Jeff Flory said FEMA recently added a new requirement and that the city still doesn't have enough information from the agency. Due to the federal uncertainty, Mayor Steve Wright suggested updating Seaside's floodplain ordinance to be in compliance with the state's code. The ordinance was adopted unanimously by Seaside City Council members. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian. Read more online at dailyastorian.com. Earlier this month, a federal judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration's push to reallocate more than $4 billion in federal funding aimed at natural disaster mitigation projects. That injunction has renewed the city of Long Beach's goal of building a tsunami evacuation tower on the peninsula. Last fall, the city was invited by the State Emergency Management Division to apply for funding from FEMA's Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities grant program in order to help pay for the construction of a vertical evacuation tower within city limits. Because Long Beach qualifies as an economically disadvantaged rural community, the city would only have to cover just 5% of the project's total cost, with FEMA paying for 90% and the state covering the other 5%. After FEMA announced in April that it would not allocate funding already approved by Congress to states this year, Long Beach Deputy Administrator Ariel Smith said the city's entire project had been put on pause. Then, in July, 20 states, including Washington, filed a lawsuit arguing that funding from the FEMA grant program had been unlawfully terminated. A federal court is now considering the state's objections. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. The Washington State Department of Agriculture's Bee Atlas Initiative is now entering its second year, and the project is seeking new bee collection volunteers in its ongoing effort to gain a better understanding of different native bee species. Through the work of volunteers over the past year, the project has identified at least 26 new or rare bee species in Washington state. One bee found in Yakima County has not been recorded in the state since 1917. For more information, including how to become a volunteer, visit the Washington Department of Agriculture's website at agr.wa.gov. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Wakayakum County Eagle, online at wahEagle.com. The Bureau of Land Management is spraying herbicides in Klamath and Lake counties to stop invasive plants. As Jefferson Public Radio's Emma J. Nelson reports, one of the chemicals is under review for potential cancer risk.
The Lakeview District Office sprays herbicides on federal lands to kill invasive grasses and prevent wildfires. One of the chemicals they're using is glyphosate, commercially known as Roundup. The Environmental Protection Agency ruled glyphosate was safe for humans in 2020, but a U.S. appellate court sent it back for further review in 2022. Oliver Liu works with the Lakeview District. He says the office hasn't received updated guidance on using glyphosate from BLM, but that it should be safe.
Typically, these herbicides are considered to be, it is safe to re-enter areas as soon as the herbicides dry, which could be a few minutes up to a couple of hours.
Liu says signs will be posted where the chemicals are being sprayed and maps can be found at blm.gov. I'm Emma J. Nelson reporting.
Of the $15 billion in federal funds that Oregon will not get because of the recent federal funding bill, most of it will impact food assistance and Medicaid, but the State Library of Oregon will also lose a quarter of their budget. The State Library is responsible for providing accessible reading materials as well as providing support to academic, school, and local public libraries. Wendy Cornelison is the state librarian. She says without intervention, Oregonians will definitely see impacts.
There will no longer be the same level of digital access to resources at local libraries. That means there won't be the same level of homework help, workforce development resources. And that's really going to hurt, especially small and rural libraries the most.
She says potential cuts to services would begin July 2026. In small towns, libraries can play a vital role in education and literacy. NWPB's Rachel Sun talked to volunteers at the nonprofit Prairie Community Library in Cottonwood, Idaho.
I'm standing in a one-room library in Cottonwood, Idaho. That's a small town about an hour drive east of Lewiston. About 24 children are listening to Storytime volunteer Carissa Jones as she explains a game.
We're going to do like a cakewalk, but it's a bookwalk today. So it's kind of like musical chairs. Who's played musical chairs before?
Oh, I know this.
Yeah. So here's how it's going to work.
Jones plays music, and when she hits pause, the children stop at a number on the floor. When Jones calls one of those numbers, the kid who's on it gets a pool pass and their choice of a wrapped book. The game was part of a Christmas in July party to celebrate the library's 40th anniversary. That milestone itself is noteworthy because, unlike a lot of other libraries, this one is entirely maintained by volunteers. It's also a nonprofit. Colleen Wilson is a founding board member. She says tax-funded libraries can be a hard sell in rural Idaho, but people here care about this library. Most of their books were donated, and when a flood closed the library last year, people showed up to move more than 17,000 books.
We cannot stand without their support and their input and their help, regardless of whether it's tax supported or not, because no man is an island.
Running the library on a volunteer basis is a lot of work. Jones says empowering visitors, especially children, is a driving force for her.
Knowledge is power. That's my favorite saying, But really, like, that's how you gain all of your knowledge and understanding. A lot of that, right, is your ability to learn, and reading is such an integral part of that.
For Frances Conklin, the events coordinator, libraries were always a vital part of her life. She says she wanted to share that experience with others.
My earliest memories just about our libraries, and they've been near and dear to my heart, critical in my education. I would spend hours in the library at college and just loved it, and always knew that when I had free time, this is where I would end up.
In some places in Idaho, library work has gotten more complicated. Last year, the state passed a law allowing anyone to request that a library move materials a requester considers obscene or harmful to minors, and allow citizens to sue the library if it does not comply. One library in Post Falls implemented an adults-only room in response. Another in Donnelly joined a lawsuit against the state. Conklin says there may be a subtle strength in her library's structure. The small board works closely with patrons to meet individual needs.
One family that the boy was of age to, you would think, would be into books, but he wasn't, unless it was sports books. And then we realized that maybe we could fill a few more titles in there to help with that. And then over time, realizing that now he's checking out other books as well.
Volunteers say getting to share the gift of reading with everyone in the area is gratifying. I'm Rachel Sun in Cottonwood, Idaho.
You are listening to news from KMUN. To hear us on the air and catch national news from NPR, tune in to 91.9 FM. Morning news begins at 7:59 every weekday. And of course, you will always be able to find today's local and regional news here at KMUN.org. To contact the KMUN News Department, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, @kmun.org.